Good evening, you're listening to Skip Intro with me, Kelvin Yee. In the studios with me is Ian McNally, Bahe Yusuf and Julian Yap. Today we are talking about Star Trek Discovery.
There is a great responsibility at hand. This could be the defining moment for multiple civilizations, millions of lives. The future may be determined by our actions, yours and mine. Someone or something is going to end all sentient life in the galaxy.
Lord knows what's waiting for us out there.
Be bold. Be brave. Be courageous.
Captain,
welcome to Discovery.
Maximum warp.
Aye, sir.
All right, so today we are talking about Star Trek Discovery, and their second season just ended this past week after 53 years, 7 television series, and 14 movies. So, what do we have?
I really enjoyed it. I should, full disclosure, I've been like into Star Trek since I was a kid. There's the drought in the 80s after Star Wars where you didn't get more Star Wars. It wasn't like one came out every Christmas and you clammed onto anything you could, including Star Trek, and especially if Wrath of Khan was on TV all the time. I think that this show is surpassing a lot of the other Star Trek shows. I mean, it looks, even the looks alone, it looks so sumptuous. At times I forget, this is a TV show. Yeah. They didn't actually just build a starship and shoot in it, but they always seem to want to, like, let's show the ceiling just because we know we have a really nice ceiling.
Yeah, they do go above and beyond with regards to shooting a TV show, you know? I think in season one, there were moments when they would do something really fancy in one episode, and then the next episode's a bit more of a bottle episode. Mm. This time around, season two, someone must have just given them the checkbook, because damn, it looks good.
The culmination of season two, it ends with this incredible blockbuster level
sequence.
And it sustains it for so long and does it really well. And it was kind of...
It's on Game of Thrones level.
Not even Game of Thrones level. I would say more like an Avengers level space war thing.
Yeah,
and it was
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting thing because Discovery is set 10 years before Captain Kirk and those even started on the TV show. So a lot of people complain about the look of the technology, but you have to update the look of these things because otherwise... It's weird having cardboard, like literally cardboard things with like random just like knobs and buttons on them. It has to actually look like sense because Star Trek did that with The Next Generation. Yeah. It kind of established we can kind of imagine what the future is going to look like a bit more now than what it was then.
Yeah.
These battles kind of bring together another part of it, which is that Star Trek in the movies has always kind of been more naval battles, where you have slow-moving, slow-turning vehicles turning at each other, trying to get the best angle on each other, and the J.J. Abrams movies, which are all things zipping all over the place because he was auditioning for Star Wars. And I think they really did a nice balance between that, and a lot of people don't agree, but I think that the show has a nice balance as well between that utopian, forward-looking thing and the action and war that unfortunately gets ratings.
Yeah. No, but for me, here's the thing, right? This happens 10 years before Kirk and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So this could have been, could have happened before.
It was a time of great turmoil in the galaxy.
Yeah, this is the, the early age of man where we still have wanted to point guns at each other and fire things, So then subsequently, Kirk, whatever, blah, 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 utopia, blah, blah, blah. And I think that was fine. I like that this one is a slightly raw version of this future 25th century, 24th century, correct me.
It's 2257s around that time.
Sure, cool. So the idea that this is a much simpler, whatever.
We're not quite as evolved as the Next Generation, but we're getting there.
We're getting there, yeah.
And we're better than Enterprise.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, I didn't have the history. I didn't have any of the context. I've just got the 3 Star Trek films, the J.J. Abrams ones. Mm. And I didn't need any sort of backing. Mm-hmm. I loved seeing this quest to this discovery of this utopian thing, which I guess is the Gene Roddenberry
ideals.
This show. And it was nice, and it was nice to see a space set show with that as the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I mean, Gene Roddenberry's idea, which was a bane to writers on all of his shows, was that, we're past all our hang-ups, so no one's getting arguments over race or your gender orientation or politics. We're all trying to work together because we're better than that, which makes it really hard to write a weekly show because drama, conflict is the source of all drama.
Yeah.
And it is a failing of the series a little bit in that they since Next Gen, they haven't really gone back to that exploring and kind of, you know, helping other people. They had to come from drama, from like meeting strange new worlds and stuff like that. Deep Space Nine brought in war.
Yeah.
Discovery starts with the Klingon War, but tries to get away from that.
And I think that's my, for me, my issue with the Picard run of Star Trek was just, hey, let's go over there and see what's over there. Hey, let's go over there and see what's over there.
No, let's go over there. When they go over there and see what used to be with Kirk is, he'd go over there, see what's over there, maybe get in a fist fight, maybe kiss some ladies. You know, it might be some weird things going on.
Yeah.
With Picard, it's like, we'll go over there. We'll have a problem. We'll debate about it for a bit. We'll have a chat in the conference room.
In the conference room,
we'll talk about our feelings. Yeah. And then maybe we'll do something or maybe we won't.
And then next episode.
This is exactly what I thought Star Trek was.
So
going into this is exactly what I expected. I thought it was going to be Doctor Who, but not as great. I mean, I love Doctor Who, so like, I just thought it wouldn't be as good.
Yeah.
I don't know why. So seeing that there was an overarching season plot and each character had their own little arcs and they had them realized and then done even better and grown more in season two, that was super cool to watch. And especially how they grew relationships between characters this season, I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, because the first season focused mostly on this character, Michael Burnham, and her Discovery doesn't even turn up, I think, for the first three or four episodes. So it was, and then they went a little bit into fan service, which when we watched the first season, you missed a lot of stuff though.
Yeah,
I was like, this could hint this thing from the show from 1967 and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I liked that. I liked going into it and then coming in the next day to you guys and going, wait, what that thing on the table? That was something important.
Oh yeah, that was the thing. You know,
and then you go, oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
So and they, because of all these distractions, you didn't get to know the crew so well. Like they weren't introduced that until that a certain point, and then there was a captain they had who, you know. You haven't seen it, but when you get to it, there's weird things happening there. And like it was mini arcs that went in different places. This season feels a lot more like, okay, we've settled. Because originally the show was going to be anthology based. They were going to have different crews and different people. And then they decided to scrap that. And this second season is you get to know the person who drives the ship, the person who runs. Like they consistently talk about their names and their relationship with the new Captain Pike, who you probably don't know is like from the original pilot of Star Trek that wasn't aired.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing with having the Enterprise turn up and then also have Pike on the ship for season two.
So I did see the first five episodes of season one. I'm just getting into it. I'm surprised that it's very, very watchable and I'm enjoying it extremely. I think the one thing I realized was that the name Star Trek felt something that it felt like something that was really big. So I never really wanted to get into it. So having to watch Star Trek Discovery, I think what I found was that the entry into the show was very easy and you didn't feel like you would miss out on a lot of things. And you didn't have to have a lot of background knowledge or fan base specific knowledge to get into the show.
No. It really is like Star Trek on acid. I mean, it picks up even more in the second season. You're talking about different storylines. There are episodes where, okay, we've got what's going on in this episode. We have two or three storylines that are over the next 2 to 3 episodes. And then there's the overarching episode as well. It kind of spoiled me for other TV shows now, because when like you have a scene where two people are talking and they're not really addressing anything, I'm just getting antsy and impatient, because on Star Trek, it's all go all the time.
Yeah.
And I think if you go back and watch the old shows, you'll fall asleep.
Well, that's really set up the old Star Trek episodes for me.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. So after the break, we've got some of your thoughts about Star Trek Discovery and we'll get to them right after this. BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Skip Intro. I'm Kelvin Yee, and we have been talking about Star Trek Discovery. In the studio with me is Ian McNally, Bahir Yusuf, and Julian Yap. Now, before we continue our discussion, Ian, I believe we have some comments from our listeners.
Yeah, so the first one's from Reza Ghani on Facebook and just says, in my humble opinion, Disco is the best Trek series so far. It's more or less the direction I envision for the franchise, darker and more intense. I think that's is that a George Lucas? That's faster and more intense, right?
Yeah.
Closer to my favorite sci-fi series of all time, Battlestar Galactica. I think that's sometimes a problem for some people in that there is a hint of darkness in the show and some people don't like that darkness.
I think it's the idea of, that Gene Roddenberry's utopian vision of the future where we don't have problems.
And that, again, it makes it hard to make it compelling.
A show. Yeah.
I don't know, like, again, I have the J.J. Abrams films and, you know, Star Trek Into Darkness. They've always been dark for me, so I didn't find that. I liked it.
We did a comment on Facebook from Ken K. Ng, who's a long-time listener, who said, it's about freaking time, Ian and Bahir. The best thing to have happened last year on Serial TV, and it's taking the end of season two for you guys to talk about it. Come on. So that to say, season one was more enjoyable for them. Season two lacked that intensity and edge of the seat cliffhangers. They also said Stemmis and Hugh arc was a bit of a PC content filler stuff, and Philippa Georgiou commanding and sinister in season one was Philippa Georgiou, if you don't know, is that's in Michelle Yeoh. So they said she was more subdued in season two. If she ran Section 31, which is kind of the Starfleet's Black Ops team, it would be a whole lot more entertaining and menacing, and an excellent solution to counter command. So, and there's also the fact that the disco is not disco enough. It doesn't do the flippy jump, which is another contentious thing they introduced in the show, that this ship can literally just jump anywhere, which I think is a version of getting around the J.J. Abrams thing of, like, we're going from Earth to Vulcan, here we go, engage, and we're there. Because he doesn't want to have, in a movie, you can't have you don't have the time for, like, let's talk in the corridors.
Yeah.
TV shows, it's like, it's going to take us 3 weeks to get this place, let's have some drama on the ship. With disco, there's like, let's just have an engine that makes us go anywhere.
Yeah, but even then,
there's a cost.
But there's an explanation behind it. There's a story behind it. It isn't just we're there.
They did a better job than J.J.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And very briefly, I think I like to just say that I kind of wish I saw more of Michelle Yeoh in the first season. Because she was really good in this.
Spoilers. You will.
Oh.
And also, coming up, I think there's talk of having a spin-off with her. So they're talking, because at the moment that this is doing well for CBS All Access, and they're like basically greenlighting anything that has Star Trek in
it. I think also people are really liking this sort of this Michelle Yeoh, this version of Michelle Yeoh,
except our own Matt Armitage, who can't handle it.
Well,
he seriously.
We'll have a chat with Matt.
We'll have a chat later. Yeah.
But no, I enjoy it. I think we should erect a statue to Philippa Georgiou and
having her sitting in the captain's chair in the Shenzhou.
Langkawi, right? She was born.
Yeah.
Season one.
Yeah. I think she references Malaysia.
Yeah. So you should do that.
I'm the same. I think that she was great in the first one. I love her in the second season. I don't think I'd say that she'd be a cooler commander. Maybe she'd be scary and maybe they'd have gotten more things done, Section 31. But I like that she got to be a little bit cheeky. She got to come in and she got to have that. She had those zingers. And
she's an element of chaos amongst all these utopian ideals.
She's a pot stirrer, right? She'll just come in, make a little trouble, and then just sort of like, see you later.
And it really works as her... Oh, spoilers.
It really works for a lot of things.
For as her thing.
Yeah. We also have one more comment that came in from Cal via email. He had a lot to say about the decline of Star Trek since the J.J. Abrams reboot. And I've seen, like, there's long-form videos on, like, how everything is supercharged. Instead of just being three friends, like, between Spock and Kirk, it's everyone's like, no, we're super friends. And it's like every space battle is an amazing space battle. Nothing is, like, on the down low. And that's kind of why it worked for those movies originally making money. But so Cal was saying that he's always counted it as the gold standard for science fiction. He talked about how it always was utopian and forward looking, but also addressed issues of the day. So, like, there was old episodes talked about the Cold War, racism, discrimination, and sexism. It also had plausible, believable science. So things like, you know, we all have communicators in our pocket. They don't go when you open them, but...
I wish they would.
But yeah, I really do. You can get that. I think there is that
There's
phone.
A ringtone, right?
There is a ringtone you can get. And for Discovery, he found... I'm paraphrasing it because it was a long email. He did find that it was a little bit of lost potential. Like, there is a little bit of magical thinking happens in a lot of the show. I mean... I own the Star Trek Next Generation technical manual. It is incredibly dry, but incredibly, like, it's so consistent writing. Like, I don't think we need one for Discovery. And I think it can be a little bit of a failing for this. So the show was so science grounded, but again, it's after 57 years. It's really hard to come up with new ideas to revolutionize the future. He also talked about how Star Trek has always been an ensemble show, but it's not really with Star Trek Discovery, with its sole focus week after week on Michael Burnham. He didn't like that so much because he didn't like her. He also talked about, they've also created the first homosexual couple in Star Trek with Stamets and Culber, but the way they're doing it is so in your face, which makes it very jarring. So overall, he wasn't mad on what was going on, but he really, really liked Anson Mount's Captain Pike. So for you, he's the captain that was, like, not really in the series before, and Anson Mount has really made him his own character.
Mm. So I guess then this just brings up the issue of whether Star Trek Discovery might have been impacted by the legacy that the brand Star Trek carries.
Mm.
Yeah. Does it?
I mean, for me, I have very I want to say bad memories, but I just have memories of trying to sit down and watch Star Trek The Next Generation with my dad because he loves it.
Mm.
I just kept falling asleep.
Was it the first season, the second season? Because those are bad.
No, but it wasn't just bad. It was slow. Yeah. For me, as a young'un coming in, watching that, it was just like, where are the guns? Go pew pew. I want explosions, right? But this newer version is the one that's for me.
Yeah.
This is my Star Trek. And I'm embracing all the... I wouldn't even say issues. I love all these characters. I love all
Cranky
these...
Cranky Stamets and...
I love Cranky Stamets.
Detmer at the Con and everybody. And when one of them, there's some elements that feel like, oh, this is a J.J. Abramsism. There's like some robot-headed people and you're like, is this just they thought it would be a cool idea?
Mm.
And in season two, they flesh that character out beautifully.
Yeah.
And like... It does seem to be a hell of a lot of thought. I think they have got a season three for Discovery, and there's a producer who's been elevated to a showrunner because apparently she was able to bring enough Trek lore to the day-to-day to like make that sing. So I think they are hitting on all those utopian ideals, and I think everyone gets a good crack of the whip when it comes to the characters.
Going back to the email, for me, going into this completely blind, I liked seeing this utopian, you know, why not have
everything.
Why not celebrate all the people that you could celebrate? Why not include all... I mean, this show touches on so many things. This person, they said that they don't talk about issues of the day.
Mm.
But what better way to talk about issues of the day than instead of tackling them, just integrate them into your series, as series regulars, just as part of the plot. They touch on disability a bit, diversity, sexuality, everything, you know, identity,
the Klingon, the Klingons in the first series is basically how does a civilized society deal with religious fanaticism war? Yeah. All these kind of things crop up.
Yeah.
And like in the show that's supposed to be so driven by very strong, concrete ideals among their characters, where else, what better show is there where you're gonna, you know, have a very good example of a very pure, beautiful romance that's very fleshed out. It's incredibly full-bodied for a TV show and over... 15 episodes in one season, and they fleshed out so well. So where else could you see that?
And
TV?
It's fleshed out like every relationship.
Yeah,
some of them just aren't in relationships. Michael herself gets into a very complicated relationship. But all the relationships that do happen get fleshed out that way.
Yeah.
Some of them are just in background having dinner over the table.
Yeah,
in the background.
And I think for me, a big part of Star Trek for me is that, as we've all said, there's a utopian version of the future. And I think it depends on your version of this utopian future, right? The utopian future I want to be in is when the pilot and the comms officer and any number of high-ranking officers, the admiral, are female or male, doesn't matter.
Some of them are bug people.
Some of them are bug people, some of them are not even people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point, right? It's for me, when I look at a piece of material, that was the test they did with the name, with Michael Burnham.
Yeah, it's also a thing, for some reason, Brian Fuller, who was the original producer before he had to leave to take on another show, he likes giving female characters in his shows male names.
Yeah, but here's the thing. On paper, if you read Michael Burnham, if it was a male or a female, it doesn't matter. The character works. And I think that was a really great test for the character of Michael Burnham. She doesn't need to be called Jane for her to be a her or a he or a character that's strong and driven and accomplishes a whole ton.
Yeah, it's like Ripley. Ripley was originally a man's name, right?
So doesn't matter Aliens. For me. I think for me that's what that utopian future should be.
I like the idea of having Star Trek especially this season as an ideal that a lot of shows can do with their characters. I don't know if that's what the original series did before, but the idea of knowing that Star Trek is doing that today, I like that they still have a relevance and still an importance culturally.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more coming up for Star Trek. This isn't the end of it. What's next?
There's going to be Star Trek Picard is coming out, so they're going to return to the Next Generation universe, which is very much returning to the well.
Can I just ask while we're on that topic, is this Picard pre-Picard The Next Generation, or is it after he's retired?
It's after he's retired.
Oh, I see.
They're not going to make Patrick Stewart wear loads of makeup to look 50 years younger.
Marvel can do it. Anybody can.
There's also a Deep Space Nine documentary. So Deep Space Nine was the one that they boldly went nowhere. They were on a space station, and it was more about the character. You got more, again, of characters and like the nasty shop owner and all that kind of stuff. So there's a documentary coming out about the making of that seems to interview all the actors, including the one who left because she wasn't getting paid enough. And the trailer shows her very clearly crying over, like, why don't you just confront me over this? So that looks very interesting. It's an Indiegogo project, so they managed to get everyone involved to have a look. And then we've got the Michelle Yeoh spin-off series. They've got an animated show, which is going to be like not about captains, but about the people who change the supplies in the replicators, basically Star Trek janitors.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a cool idea.
We'll see. I mean, I think Kurtzman was involved in the Transformers at one point, right? He's a showrunner. Yes. So the worry is that they will wring every coin out of it until they kill it like that. But, you know, hopefully they don't.
I mean, for me, I'm cool with it as long as they keep giving me good content, you know? Look, the story of the Star Trek janitors sounds awesome.
Yeah, hopefully it's a franchise that will live long and prosper.
And with that, we've been talking about Star Trek Discovery today. You can also keep your thoughts coming. We are at SkipIntroMY on all our social media accounts. You can also drop us a note at movies@bfm.my. This is Skip Intro on BFM 89.9.